Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's Political Commentary.
This morning with Dr. Bryce Edwards. Morena Bryce, how are you?
Morena Rachel, I'm very well.
It's great to have you on the show. We haven't had a chat to you since the election finished, and we would love to get your thoughts on what the new sort of parliamentary lineup is. But first, I think we should touch base on a big announcement yesterday, which was, of course, the declaration of a climate emergency, which has now officially been made by the government. What's this actually going to mean? Is this just a statement, or is there substance to this?
Well, I mean, there is symbolism in it because this, you know, really is what Jacinda Ardern and her government and, you know, a huge amount of the population really want to, you know, make some big progress on. And this is a declaration to say there is going to be big progress. There was some substance in it too. So this government is, you know, releasing at the same time some statements about what they're going to do in terms of making the government itself carbon neutral by 2025, and they're talking about requiring all government departments to now buy electric cars. They're going to get rid of coal burners. They're going to change in terms of their own buildings to make them more carbon neutral.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is both symbolic and substantial, but there will be a lot of questioning about whether there's enough substance there and whether this really is enough, given the huge requirements, you know, necessary to turn around climate change.
One of the things that people who were supportive of declaring a climate emergency were saying is it does kind of slap that urgent label on it in a way that's pretty hard to ignore. Do you think this means we're going to see rapid change in policy making? As you said, you've just mentioned a bunch of things that the government is planning to do. How quickly can we see those things implemented or expect to see them implemented?
I don't know. This government hasn't been particularly fast in moving on a lot of its other objectives over the last 3 years, and you know, there's been a big debate about why that might be, why they haven't achieved as much as they wanted to, with New Zealand First being seen as a handbrake, and then of course COVID coming along and disrupting things. So I think it will depend on how much pressure is put on the government, and we might see some more climate change marches. We might see it might depend on how much the public actually want the government to make moves faster. So they've got a whole new framework for how they get advised. They have a whole new, government agency that's going to tell the government what they need to do to meet their requirements, and that's going to have a report coming out next year. And so, I think that will depend on a lot on pressure. We can't just expect the government to do things by itself. And there will also be pressure from business and some vested interests to make progress not happen too fast, because there will always be a cost.
Mm.
A big cost, really, to some of these climate change initiatives.
Well, let's zoom out a little bit to the new lineup that we've got in Parliament. What are your initial reactions to, the team, the parliamentary team for the next 3 years? Anything that stands out to you, Bryce?
Both Parliament and the new government are really modernised. So we saw a huge influx of new MPs. At this election, we saw 40 new MPs, and so that's a huge turnover.
Mm.
And the new people coming in really do reflect modern New Zealand. We're seeing a lot more women, ethnic minorities, a lot more diversity in terms of sexuality, and much younger MPs. So Parliament's changing really fast, and in a sense, it's becoming more diverse. And you can see that in government as well, with the new cabinet. That was quite bold that Jacinda Ardern put forward. But I'd still note that although these are all really amazing things to celebrate, we're seeing a lot more lawyers, we're seeing a lot more middle class in Parliament and government. So while it's kind of becoming a lot browner, more female, younger, it's also becoming a lot more sort of middle of the road in some ways, and middle class. And I think, that's a bit of a concern if it becomes more diverse, but also more excluding of maybe poorer people, working class people, etc.
But is that a change from how it's previously been, or is it just a continuation of previous ways?
We'll have to look at some more data that comes out on the occupations and backgrounds of the MPs, and that will be coming out in January. But from what I've seen, it's getting worse. It is becoming, lawyers are now the biggest group in Parliament. There's very few, virtually no one from kind of manual working class, blue collar backgrounds in Parliament now, very few unionists. It does seem to be getting worse, in my view. Maybe that's just what's happening to politics everywhere in the world. It's becoming more of a middle class, professionalised pursuit. But it does mean, I believe, that it leads to politicians being less able to see things from the situation of those at the bottom, and maybe less able to care about some of those things like housing affordability and poverty.
I do want to talk about housing. We'll move into that in a second. But I am curious about some of the sort of big sort of maiden speeches that we saw in the last week, very notably Ibrahim Omar from the Labour Party. His background is very much not of that middle class working collar. He's got a refugee background, worked as a cleaner for a very long time, and came up through the living wage movement. I'm interested in what you think parliamentary members like that are going to bring to the table in this term.
Lived experience of MPs is important, and that's one MP that I think is the aberration, and he's one to watch, and extraordinary background and life story. And there's some really talented MPs as well, all sorts of MPs coming in, and this is a fresh and dynamic new parliament, I think it's not that everyone's same-ish and the same. So, lots of good people coming in.
Well, let's move and talk a little bit about housing, because this has been, hot-button topic for New Zealand for over a decade now, and probably longer than that too. But we have seen rapid, changes in the way people are talking about this. We've got some tenancy law changes coming in February, which is, going to be supporting the rights of people who are renting to live in New Zealand. But we are seeing it just being so unaffordable for people to buy houses, first-time homeowners, or, live in a property that they own themselves in New Zealand. What are your thoughts around this? How should it be, fixed? Because this has been a problem that's been handed between successive governments for years.
I think you're really right, Rachel, to point out that this has been going on for decades. It's not this current government that's the only one to necessarily blame or have to deal with this problem. Subsequent National and Labor governments really have seen rocketing house prices. But in the last 3 months, we've possibly seen the highest trajectory increases in house prices on record. And it wasn't... Yeah, so this isn't new, but it does seem to be getting particularly worse. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are talking about how the Reserve Bank at the moment are really trying to pump lots of money into the economy, basically printing money to make sure the economy keeps doesn't go into recession too much. We keep unemployment down. But the byproduct is that this money is being passed on to the trading banks who are lending it to people to invest. And it's but mostly being invested in houses. And so it is pushing up, and it's making it difficult for first-time buyers to get in. But also, as we're seeing at the bottom of the market, rents are becoming just incredibly high. It's leading to a lot of inequality, to poverty. No one's really got any great one magic bullet for fixing these things. And it's very hard for the government to know what to do. People talk about capital gains taxes as the answer. And I personally think they're part of the answer, but I'm not sure it's going to change things that much if they did implement one. My own pitch would be that they need to just build a lot more houses themselves. Mm-hmm. So social housing, state housing, this government's done better than previous recent governments, but it's still not building anywhere near enough to match the problem. We've got a real deficit in the number of houses. We probably need 100,000 new state houses. And that, the problem with that supporting those is it would cost billions and billions, and government doesn't want to spend that money. But I think it's a good investment, and it's really going to, you know, we should focus on those people at the bottom at the moment, because maybe the conversation recently has been too much about first home buyers, which is fair enough, but I think the government really could make a difference by just mass production of state housing.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Bryce. It's great to have you back on the show. We'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks.
Rachel.
And have a lovely summer if we don't see you before we wrap up for Christmas as well. Ka kite.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.
With